Hour number two of Willie and D-Mace here on 102.5 The Game, 106.3. And we're broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Nick Frazier here with you. And we are joined by Jonathan Hutton, as we are every Wednesday on the show. Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow. So, Hut, we've got a topic. I don't know if you caught our last segment here. We were setting the table for you.
Tell me.
So, Bill Barnwell, who is, he's got, just to give you his background for people that don't know, he's got a little bit of an analytic background. He looks at the numbers and he does analysis. I think he's done well. There's a bunch of people that certainly can crunch the numbers, but putting it in terms of, you know, simplifying it for the average fan who doesn't want to just get into a big math class for these, he does a good job with it. And he basically said if you had average quarterback and average offensive line play for every team, how would you rank the skill position guys, the guys that would fill out a fantasy team, your wide receivers, running backs, and tight ends? How would you rank all 32? Where do you think he has the Titans going into this season?
So it's running back, wide receiver. It's just the skill positions. Mm-hmm. I would say
running back, wide receiver, and tight end.
I think he has the Titans middle of the pack.
Okay. Take a guess. 1 through 32.
I'm going to say 16.
16, you're close. 19 is what he had. And I think it's a great question for this Titans team, because we know there are big questions with their offensive line and their quarterback. But right. What they've tried to do is surround especially the quarterback with – experienced players that can help support and help this guy grow. So the fact that they're only 19th, is that a good sign or a bad sign based on the last couple of years?
Ooh, I mean, did he do this last year?
Yes, he did, and he had the Titans at 19 going into last year.
Really?
29th in 2023, and that was when everything collapsed, right? Mm-hmm. That's when they went from 7-3 to 7-10.
It surprises me, guys, about last year compared to this year. Like, they're identical, right?
Yes. 2022 last year.
They're vastly improved at the skill position this year. I mean, just wide receiver alone.
That has to be based on the investment they've made, right? They're hoping it's got to be a jump.
But they lose out on Henry. I mean, he's certainly factoring into that. Tight end has not been a strong point of this roster the last few years now. No, they're improved. The difference is the quarterback, right? And it still goes back to Levis. He's got all the resources, including the coach and the pass-friendly offense. So we'll find out quite a bit and early on. I mean, he's learning a new offense for like the seventh time in his career, I believe. It feels like that anyway with everything you had at Kentucky plus high school plus now. But Willie, I mean, he's set up almost perfectly for a guy who's coming in with a new coach and a chance to prove himself in year number two as the guy.
They've made a great effort.
He's in a really good spot compared to other quarterbacks in his same draft class.
Yes. I don't think they're throwing him to the wolves with a bunch of no names. They have clearly tried to spend money to give him a support system. So this article, I think, is a really good measure, though, because he's saying, okay, let's make everything equal. And let's compare this group to all the other teams. And he equated it to, and you'll probably get a kick out of this, Hutton, that it's a fantasy team almost. You see the names of Hopkins, Ridley, Boyd, and you're like, yeah, I used to have that guy in my fantasy league a couple years ago, right? Tony Pollard, right? But it's like the guy who shows up in your league and he hasn't played fantasy football in the last couple years, and he only remembers the names. And he hasn't really done a lot of research. He said this would be the type of team he would draft. But the question is, at age 30 for Boyd, Ridley's about to turn 30. Hopkins is now 32. Pollard has played a lot of seasons. He's had some injuries. Are you still getting what you hope you're getting from names like that? That's going to be a major theme.
Well, and they're banking on the fact that they're going to get more of the names in the passing game. You know, like they don't have to rely on the backfield, and it's on the arm of Levis. Look, the answer to me is yes. We had the conversation last week about you take the over-under on passing yards, touchdowns, and interceptions. I took the over on all three. And if you look at it from that perspective, Will Levis would be Trevor Lawrence of last year.
Yeah, that's a 19.5 touchdowns, I think, was seen. The over-under. 12.5 interceptions. Right. Yeah, 3,400 yards.
Okay, let's compare this to the division. Is Houston top five for him?
Houston, Houston has gone from, that's a really interesting one, 32nd the last 2 years to fourth going into this year.
And that's a major jump. Is Miami number one?
Miami is number four.
Okay.
That was one of D-Mace's guesses when I asked him to guess where he thinks they are. Miami's number four. So any other guess on who number one might be? Texans are four. Miami is number three.
Okay. Kansas City is going to be in the top 10, but I don't think he's got them that high.
Actually, this is an interesting, again, quarterback is even across the board. So you take away Mahomes and Howie Elvis, they have Kansas City only 14th because after Kelsey, it's kind of a group of pedestrians. So I see the argument there. It is subjective, right? We can all have our own thing. But he's got the 49ers number one. Cincinnati, it was top five the last couple of years, but has now slipped to 11th in his.
That's way too low for them.
Okay. At number one to number two to number 11.
Where are the Jets?
The Jets, middle of the pack.
And Vikings?
They're 12. Jets are 12.
Jets 12.
Vikings, I don't think, are in the top 10.
He actually mentions the Vikings as an example of a team.
They're fifth.
Just because Justin Jefferson elevates that group of five. You know, he sort of says, think about it as a group of five of the best playmakers. Mm-hmm. Who are your best five playmakers? Take away the quarterback, right? And so Justin Jefferson obviously is better than most teams number one, and then after that, it's a little bit more of a, well, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Right?
You got Jordan
Addison. So the big surprise, it will be Chicago.
Chicago is number six. From 31st 2 years ago to 17, he's now got them number six.
So, Mace, who did you guess is number one overall? I went with Miami there.
I said, at first,
you said Philadelphia,
which is
number two.
Miami,
and Miami's number three.
And then I kind of went to some more, and then I thought, like, man, the one team I did forget was San Fran.
And San Francisco's number one.
San Fran, okay.
Which also illustrates when you have Brock Purdy making no money.
And it's an even deal.
And you have the resources. These are five pretty high-paid guys that they've got on here. Debo Samuel, George Kittle, Brandon Ayuk. Christian McCaffrey. Christian McCaffrey is noteworthy in that he is the only running back that is scheduled to make over $15 million per year. And he illustrates the trend in football is that there are now 20 wide receivers that make $20 million or more per year. So that is so different than, say, 20 years ago, right? But it's the trend that is going forward is you're paying the big wide receivers to get it done.
And everyone's going to be the new big payday, like CeeDee Lamb is going to hold out and he'll get paid eventually. Mm-hmm. Prescott's got to do his thing first, right?
Ayuk is waiting to see what's happening with him.
From a fantasy perspective, at least in my league, Tyreek Hill crushes it, and then Tua just floats layups up there to practically anybody in that offense. They put up numbers. I would have gone Miami personally, but I don't know the criteria for how he's really analytically diving into it from that perspective, Willie. The Titans being where they are, it's good. I just don't understand why they're the same spot as they were a year ago because they're vastly improved offensively.
Yeah, he's looking at efficiency. That's going to be a main thing. Let's get into the running back part of it because we talked about this a little bit yesterday, Hutton. And he says Tony Pollard, the team's replacement for Derrick Henry, was markedly inefficient after returning from a fractured fibula last year. Even while playing behind an excellent offensive line in Dallas. I can't really fault Rand Carthon. This is what you have to do when you let Henry leave in free agency. And, of course, he goes into the A.J. Brown situation. Yep. Burks hasn't done well. Tennessee fans are intrigued by Tajay Spears, although I'm concerned about his ability to play as a regular back given an arthritic knee. So how do you think that part of the equation figures looking forward? Nick here, he feels like Spears is ready for a breakout. I think it would be good for a younger player like Spears to really take a bigger role. So Spears and Pollard, how do you think that equation comes together?
Willie, I look at it from the combo, and I'm adding in catches out of the backfield as an extension of the run game here.
Sure.
I like what they've done with Henry gone, because the focus is now on the quarterback, not in the backfield at running back. If you're doing that, the dual combination that we're seeing is the way to go. Instead of having the feature back, have multiple, and now you can do different route combinations. Both guys are practically the same type of player. One's younger, and you hope the younger guy breaks out, right? But I mean, Carthon's had his eye on Pollard for a while. I think this has been part of his plan. And again, I think part of what he liked about Levis was the fact that Levis was coached by a guy that was out of the tree of Shanahan and McVay from San Fran. I think all this is kind of his style and his setup. I look around the league. I don't mind what they're doing. Execution-wise, we'll see. There's a lot of what-ifs. But, I mean, if you're not going to just have a bell cow that's getting 20 carries a game and not be just run-oriented and much more balanced, if not far, to the passing game, I think they've set it up fine. And Pollard, when healthy, has been sufficient. And now they are betting on the fact that they've got the cheaper version of Pollard in the backfield with Spears, who should be improving based on what we saw last year. And we saw positive signs. I don't necessarily buy into everything he's saying. It's a big loss with Henry. That's a big part of your offense. But it's not like the Giants losing Saquon Barkley.
Yeah, it's not. Because Saquon did so much for them. He wasn't just the running back. He was a
– And how they've addressed the offseason, Mace.
Absolutely, absolutely. We're talking with Jonathan Hutton, host of Hot Mic with Hutton Withrow. Now, they did explain to they went more into it. They just didn't give the three wide receivers' name without going into at least one of them. Obviously, they talked about the age, but then they talked about Tyler Boyd. And the concern with Barnwell was – each of the last three seasons, his play has declined from a number standpoint. And that's key, because I look at last season when Chase was down, T. Higgins missed some games.
Yes.
You, Boyd, as the third guy in this trio, your game needed to elevate. We can't say, well, the quarterback, Burrow, wasn't there, because the backup quarterback came in, and Brian Callahan and
Jake Browning
and the head coach did an excellent job at putting together a game plan so they could still go out there and score points. Hell, they damn near made the playoffs. It came down to the last game with their backup. And you still, as a player, I still think Tyler Boyd's a good player. But we also got to look at the reality of this. The last 4 years, his number has declined with a team that loves passing the football. And even so much so, last year, he was really the only consistent guy, meaning available, and his numbers declined even more. That should be that's a red flag for me. Even though I still think he's a good player, we just can't think that he's going to come in here and all of a sudden, because he knows the system, that he's just going to flourish. What the NFL has told me over the last 4 years in regards to him, that he's on the decline. Still a good player, but he is definitely on the decline, as is, I believe, not Calvin Ridley, but D-Hop. D-Hop is still going to do what he needs to do, but his play is going to continue to dip.
Yep, and while on the decline, man, it's still better than what they have.
Yeah, you're right. You know, absolutely. Absolutely.
I think this is something that's going to be a big thing, is weighing that, right? They may be in decline, but they are certainly hoping that that's still an upgrade of what they've had.
Well, and Hopkins, I mean, is just the definition of being a pro. Mm-hmm. He's going to – the catch radius, all that. We've seen it, right? The key is Ridley on the ascend and proving that he's the big money guy, right? Like, he's the top dog alpha. And then I think the X factor for me with Boyd is just the fact that he knows this offense and can help literally everyone pick up on this. It's vastly different than what they were running a year ago. So – I like the fact that he can help out everyone from Levis to the receivers to the, you know, the route combinations, the breaks, all that. Like, hypothetically, he's going to be an extra coach in that way, and he's going to produce as well. A former 1,000-yard receiver. I know he's not that dude, Mace, but, I mean, he's also not Nick Westbrook-Ikhine. You know what I mean? And no knock on NWI, but at least you got someone that you can go to. And on top of that, two backs out of the backfield. The tight ends are crucial in all this too. We need to see a step up there. But if Boyd, if the group, all things healthy, I mean, let him be a number three. He can put up number three numbers. And that's perfect for what they're asking him to do, considering Hopkins is going to get plenty of looks. We saw that from week one in New Orleans. And, yeah, Ridley should be top dog demanding the football. And if that goes well, Boyd's going to be just fine.
I think what they're hoping for is that the whole is better than the parts.
Yes.
They're hoping that,
you're right.
You know, Tyler Boyd, 600-700 yards, D-Hops, 800-900 yards, and then ultimately you want Ridley to be over 1,000 yards. They're hoping that the sum of the parts makes – you know, yes, the team better. Because I think individually, if you're asking them to be the lead dog week in and week out at their age, I'm not saying that they can't do it week in, week out, but it's going to be hard to ask one guy to be that guy every game. It's going to have to, they're going to have to spread it apart. I mean, spread it out amongst the wide receivers as well as the tight ends. That's why I think the tight ends are critical in what this team is able to do in regards to the passing game. If they can get the tight ends going, I think it opens up everything for the wide receivers.
You see some personnel packages where we might even see a tight end on the field.
We've seen three more often than we've seen none, right?
Exactly. Yeah, you're right.
The key with that, you're right. And the key with that is hopefully the tackles are serviceable where you don't need the tight end out there.
Wouldn't that be a nice thing to think about? Mm-hmm. I still am going to wait and see on that part with where they are at
tight. I agree. And then the question is, if one of the receivers goes down, can Boyd be the number two? And can you have Burks? Can Burks be Boyd? You know what I mean? Can he be the possession receiver that's reliable?
I think it's going to have
numbers may be going down. But they had, I mean, Mace and Cincy, they're treating two receivers like number ones, even with the backup. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but you can afford to do that in Cincinnati when you have when you have Chase and Higgins. You can afford if one of those go down. They both are number one receivers. But if someone goes down, if a Ridley goes down, then obviously DeAndre slides into that number one spot.
Yep.
But to me, then Traylon has to slide into that number two spot. I just don't think Tyler Boyd at this point of his career, considering what I've seen, the decline, again, still a good player, I don't think he then can move to a number two and you still have that ability to do the things you want to do when it was Calvin Ridley and D-Hop. Now it's Calvin Ridley or it's D-Hop and T. Higgins. It has to be Traylon. It has to be Traylon.
It does. And a lot of short-term contracts, too, that they've added. Mm-hmm. It's an interesting approach because if Levis is just good but not great, they're kind of stuck with – what do they do a year from now with Hopkins?
This is a big, that's, to me, that's a big long-term question.
You know, the short-term contracts with Boyd or what they've done in the backfield with Pollard. You know, like it's a very intriguing setup considering the ages of these players and a young quarterback that you hope to have an answer on. But if he's just okay, I don't think that's good enough. But it may be good enough to give him more time and more assets. Mm-hmm. But again, there's still another offseason away from NFL quality depth. But the starter level of this, just contractually, I'm saying, and the age is intriguing because they're wanting to win and hit a kind of a boom or bust right now. First time play caller, first time head coach, and of course Will Levis, who's jury's still out.
All right, parting shot for you, Hutt.
Yep.
You gave us a good one on the way out. We were debating the Sandlot versus Back to the Future, which was released on July 4th weekend. Which one was the better movie? So here's one for you. Who will have a head coaching job next year in the NFL? Mike Vrabel, Bill Belichick, both or neither?
Vrabel's going to have a head coaching job.
And so you don't think Belichick will?
I think Bill's headed to media and staying there.
Staying there, okay.
Mm. I think so.
Can he do that?
He's got WME repping him, I believe. he's You know, there are some other streaming services that if he's not going to just stick with the Manning and Omaha Productions, which is probably where he's going, there's a lot of different variables that will factor in a year from now contractually with those TV agreements. He's going to be a big part of it, I think.
Okay, but he could do all that and still, if he gets offered a job, if he wants to take it. I feel like he still wants to coach, don't you?
Yeah, but he wants to be the general manager too.
Well, that's part of the equation for sure. And that's where Atlanta probably balked, right? They didn't want to give him everything.
Yeah, and maybe, you know, everyone's mentioning Dallas. I'm trying to think of the owners that would just give it to him. But Jerry's going to be the GM there. Again, like...
But does he need to almost adjust Belichick and say, okay, they're not going to give me everything, so I got to take what I can get, and that's just I'll be the coach.
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess he could have done that in Atlanta this year. Mm-hmm.
So you think Vrabel is the answer? That he'll get one before
head coach? Yes,
Belichick.
I think so too.
And with the right, I think Vrabel could easily be in Buffalo. With the right setup, we've seen what he does with a roster and a quarterback that's set up. He can win. And then we see kind of the Peter Laviolette factor, where it fizzles out and kind of wears thin.
That is interesting to see if Vrabel ends up, because he's got about six stops before he gets to Peter Laviolette level. Because
basically, you're
working on the whole Eastern Division.
So basically, you're saying he's a one man traveling circus. He's only in town
not
for
a
while.
He's a the one man description's perfect because he's the alpha of alphas, and he's going to make sure you know it. You know what I mean?
Infuse life and then sort of get stuff. Yeah,
he's going to be very selective, and he's going to have like. With McDermott, it's interesting just some of the other coaching scenarios out there. There's a lot of coaches on the hot seat that need to win that have pretty good rosters that will be surprising firings maybe as we talk about it a year from now. But I think Vrabel lands one of those gigs, much like he did here, where the roster was set up good enough for him to come in and make a splash with a good draft, and he builds off of it with an efficient quarterback and a great run game. I think they could do that. He could jump in with one of the premier quarterbacks in Buffalo and take off. I mean, McDermott was kind of shaky this past season. That's one I'm watching for.
Jonathan Hutton from Hutton. Hot Mic with Hutton and Withrow. Jonathan, thanks a lot for your time. As always, you've given us some things to ponder, and we'll talk again next Wednesday.
Yeah, always enjoy this, guys. Have a great rest of the week, all right?
All right, sounds good. Yep. Jonathan Hutton with us. So when we come back, the Buffalo thing is interesting to me, and we're going to have this topic later in the show, later in the week on the show, and that is who are the true Super Bowl contenders. So we're going to come back to this in just a moment. You're listening to Willie and D-Mace here on 102.5 The Game. Good background music to tell you what Joe Dubin's up to. The Game Summer Ticket Tour is back, so join Joe Dubin, Big Joe on the Go, at Yazoo Brewing Company at 900 River Bluff Drive in Madison. That's coming up Thursday, July 18th from 4 to 6, as he gives away tickets to upcoming concerts in Nashville, including Def Leppard, Bush, Train, Dierks Bentley, and more. Unfortunately, we can't have Michael, but we're playing Michael, but... Some very good bands, nonetheless.
They can just play Michael if they want to.
They can.
They may get sued, but they can play them.
Imagine Bush doing a Michael Jackson song. It'd be a little different. Or Def Leppard doing that.
They would almost have to do Beat It.
Because
it's a little bit more upbeat.
Eddie Van Halen's on Beat It, yeah. Also, you can get signed up for the grand prize, which is tickets to our Predators home game, a Sounds game, and to the Big Machine Music City Grand Prix. So that's a pretty good trifecta there. So more details. Just go to thegamenashville.com/tour. So Joe Dubin is going to be like the Mike Damone. He's like the hookup with the tickets in Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
Hey, Mike Damone. he was
the ticket dealer.
Was it on Fast Rush Time. Hour? When it was on Rush Hour, he's like, hey, Mike Damone. Vic Damone.
Rush Hour is a good flick, too. Speaking of movies, we were just talking about Michael Jackson. Did I bring this up to you guys before? The Greatest Night in Pop. On Netflix, they had the making of the
We Are the World
video.
Yeah, I've seen that.
What a great show
on Netflix?
Netflix.
It's on Netflix,
It's a true documentary. They had the cameras running the whole time. Mm-hmm. They did it all in one night. They had 47 of the best pop people around, all in the same room. It was just legend after legend. And there were a few kind of people of the time who had, you know, that was just when they were hot and they didn't stay that way. But for the most part, the staying power of the people in that room, Smokey Robinson, Michael Jackson, Bruce Lionel Richie, Bruce Springsteen, Kenny Loggins. I mean, just Huey Lewis.
Cyndi Lauper.
It's really well done. And they have some people sort of in the background talking about what they were seeing. And this all was done one night after that. Everybody had gone to the American Music Awards.
Was it the Grammys or the AMA?
It was the AMA. Which was a big deal in L.A. Everybody was there. So after the show was over,
they did it.
Lionel Richie won like 7 awards. He hosted the show and then had to sort of be the ringleader with Quincy Jones to put this whole
and Michael
together. Just really, I never knew. I was like, oh, this would be nice. I remember that video. You know,
my favorite.
But it was really cool.
My favorite two parts of that song is sort of it's back to back. Is Bruce Springsteen, because I love his voice.
Yeah,
and how. But then Cyndi Lauper comes in like. Those were the two best verses. Michael's verse was great. I get it. Lionel's was great. And there were other singers in there. But because of, and they even talked about Bruce Springsteen, his voice.
Yeah.
It was
he just
different.
Finished up a tour.
It was just, and he had that raspy voice. And every time that song came on, I couldn't wait to get to Bruce Springsteen's part.
We all kind of got sick of that song after a while. We got to be honest. But
no, we did.
It was such a great song, and it really lasts. And what's interesting about this documentary is all those little parts that we remember, they had all these solos with all the egos. Like, how do you choose who sings? And how do you do the batting order? How do you know where everybody's going to stand? Do you not want to put certain people together? They had to think about all these things, and they only had one night to do it. And the takes, like, you can hear them try it, and you're like, that doesn't quite sound like it did in the song. Like, you know that's not the take. So then they do it again. They're like, that's the one. I know that's the one in the song. Like, Cyndi Lauper has to do it a couple of times before she gets it right. There's Bruce. Yeah, there's the boss. I can see Stevie. There's Stevie. It is really brilliant. Putting all those different types of music and musicians together.
It hadn't been done since.
It's called The Greatest Night in Pop. If you're looking for like summer viewing, Nick, I'm just put it out there.
Thank you.
Check it out.
I do like to watch a little Netflix here and there.
Okay.
I'm actually on the, I think it's called Sprint. It's the new one that just came out about the Olympics.
Oh, yeah. I haven't watched that one. No.
Yeah. That's on my docket. Obviously, Receiver came out. The NFL one came out today, I think.
Okay. Well, speaking of sprints, this was a good question that came up. We've got a couple minutes before we move forward here. We're going to talk about a couple other things up our sleeve here, including NFL referees and how do they try to improve that facet of the game. We've got a little Predator segment we're going to hit. But with the sprinters, this was another thing that I was just listening to the MMQB podcast, and he was mentioning this. Remember back in the day, they would get a sprinter, and an NFL team would sign him up.
Ronaldo Nehemiah.
Ronaldo Nehemiah is the first name, and he was a hurdler, right?
Yeah.
But he did play for the 49ers.
James Jett.
Well, Willie Gault was
a great
sprinter, but he was a football player.
Yeah, but he's talking about a Hall of Famer.
Hall of Famer. And wasn't there a guy named Ron Johnson? But it used to be a little bit more in the in our thought of, could a sprinter be a football player? Mm-hmm. And so I just wonder if that there was a story. What was it? Was it a rugby player, an Australian rules football player? Was signed as a lineman or something?
Oh, for the Chiefs.
For the Chiefs,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it was the English Rugby League.
Yeah.
So not Australian rugby or NRL, but yeah, Australian.
So the question was asked, as we go forward here, and as NFL teams are always looking for talent, are we going to see that ever come back around, where somebody watches the Olympics and says, you know what, just give that guy a football. If I can block it up, that guy could score, right? Like we could see that.
Do you think
that could happen, or is it so specialized now that we just don't see a crossover in sports like maybe we used to back in the day?
I don't think it would be hard pressed for me to believe that in this day and age, because things are so specialized. Like, you know, 20, 30 years ago, it was, you know, a sprinter was a football player. A football player was a sprinter. You know, in high school, you didn't play football unless you ran track. At least that's how my coach was.
Yeah.
Like, you had to run track to play football and vice versa. So there was always that crossover with athletes, you know, male athletes.
And we one can help the other.
Exactly.
Right?
We can be a damn good 100-yard sprinter or 200-yard sprinter, or in my case, 2 and 4. But I can also be a wide receiver. Now, because things are so specialized and these kids are going to so many camps, like specialized for that individual sport, I think once you get in college, it's hard, not to say guys can't, but it's hard to be a dedicated sprinter and then come out and play football. Just like I think it would hard to be a dedicated football player and then say, I'm going to dedicate myself to track that same season. Yeah, you may win some meets or whatnot. Tyreek Hill is an example of that. But I think once you start competing at that high level, then things start to drop off. Why? Because your body's beat up. You specialize in one sport. Yeah, you fast, but these guys are fast. You fast, but these guys are fast. Now, Tyreek Hill, he's a different breed.
The cheetah.
You know, the cheetah, he's a different breed. But it's harder now for individuals to go from the track, being dedicated in track, and then saying, you know what, I want to dedicate myself to being a wide receiver. Well, if you hadn't been working on these things, we hadn't been working on that skill, I told you.
So you think it's a lot harder neutralize, to do it now.
I can neutralize. Once I figure a fast guy out, if he doesn't go in and hone his skills as a receiver, I can figure you out very quickly, a fast guy. I can neutralize you very quickly. If I'm a defense.
Yeah.
You got some speed, I get it, but I can neutralize that speed.
Much more so than, say, in 1985 exactly. or something when they were
absolutely.
Trying this.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Now, because these cornerbacks are so good at turning their hips, flipping their hips, jamming at the line of scrimmage, coordinators are so much better to put together a scheme where these ultra-fast guys are not just running by themselves. Again, Tyreek Hill is the exception to the rule, but if Tyreek Hill was by himself, i.e. when he was in Kansas City, you saw how his numbers per catch dipped every year because teams started to figure out how to neutralize his speed. He still was going to get his catches, but they neutralized his speed. He was catching a lot of 5-yard routes, 7-yard routes, 10. He was no longer catching those 30 and 40-yard bombs that he was catching the season prior. It's a little bit easier in Miami. Why? Because you got Waddle. And then you got other fast guys on your team. So they can't solely concentrate on you. But when you are the lone fast guy, I can neutralize your speed. Give me some games. Matter of fact, give me a year. You give me a year, I will neutralize your speed if you don't have somebody on the other side that can take the top off.
Okay. What about a kick returner? You returned your share of kicks. Mm-hmm. They're trying to get the kick return back in the game some. Could a track star do better in that? Like, if you just got a super sprinter.
This is where I think they have a chance. Because what is it? Catch the ball, find a lane, hit it, and go. Now, you got to hold on to the ball. You can't be scared of getting hit, which I know if you are a dedicated track runner, you don't want to get hit, okay? You want to be able to run freely. So the kickoff return is different. It's different now because of the way they're doing it. No longer do we have 30 yards to run to try to get you. Everybody's pretty much lined up right at the same. You can't move until that guy catches the ball, and you're only 10 yards, I think 10, 12 yards away. Now it gives that fast guy a better opportunity at hitting that crease and going, as opposed to guys running down at you at 100 miles per hour and you knocking over people, and now all of a sudden you have no lane to run in. I think this gives those really ultra-fast guys an opportunity to come back in the NFL and be specialists on kickoff return. That's the way I see it.
And also, I'm sorry, Willie, but before that, if you think, I don't know if this is a rule or not in the new kickoff terms, mm-hmm. but if you're a sprinter and you specialize in running in that aspect, start back 5 yards and try to time up the kick when it comes down. You're already, because everybody's like, what, 5 yards apart?
Yeah,
you're gonna close, You're going to get a better, I guess, call it a tornado or valley mm-hmm. to run through rather than the old kickoff format where you're not going to have that clear, I guess, valley to run through. Mm-hmm. With this new format, you're going to see a lot of a brick wall. You're going to see an open valley on the right, open valley on the left. Heck, you might even see it in the middle.
Okay, so I'm one that is, I'll believe it when I see it, mm-hmm. that this rule is going to be something I should really take note of. For example, in fantasy football, you draft, at my league, you draft a defense and special teams. Mm-hmm. I've gotten to the point where, like, the special teams, nobody's going to return a kickoff for a touchdown. Maybe
because all of them were being kicked out the back of the end zone.
Are we? Am I underestimating how big this is going to be? Are we going to see more special teams touchdowns?
I think you're going to see at least more returns because now the incentive, there's an incentive to make it a returnable ball. I think the rules are if you kick it out the back of the end zone, you get to start a little bit further ahead.
Like 35, 45.
Yeah, then if you allow the guy to catch it. So they're trying to add kickoff return back to the game.
Right.
Because the last 2 years, like you said, it's either out the back of the end zone or they're not getting a return at all. You know, they're getting minimum yards. I think this gives them the opportunity to put the kickoff return as a key play back in the football game. Because once you cross that first way, it's going to be interesting to see how kickoff coverage teams do this. How do they cover, you know, a situation like this, because it's going to have to be different from how you used to cover it, you know, even last season.
I'm curious. I that would be a nice little infusion, and I know a lot of teams are thinking about it. I wonder how the Titans are going to try to go about it. But could a track star end up getting signed, gold medalist in the Olympics?
Especially if he has history of playing football.
Yeah.
I sign him.
Okay. Okay.
I would sign him. At least for camp.
The next Ronaldo Nehemiah could be playing for the Titans if D-Mace has his way.
I mean, I like watching Australian rugby. Uh-huh. I think y'all know that or not.
Well, that is another thing that people are looking at is could guys like that end up being good NFL players if given a chance?
Yeah. There's a guy, Valentine Holmes, who plays for the North Queensland Cowboys.
North Queensland Cowboys?
Yeah.
Is Jerry Jones on the Cowboys?
I'm sorry. Is it the Cowboys or might be the Titans?
Titans.
Yeah, Gold Coast Titans. I'm sorry, Gold Coast Titans, North Queensland Cowboys. Yeah, plays for the Cowboys. He played for the Jets back in like 2015, 16, uh-huh. something like that, as a running back. Didn't really pan out well for him. I think it was like more preseason stuff, but went back to the NRL.
Hmm. I wonder if they'll do more scouting like that. We'll see. Especially with Nick's theory that the next generation of players with NIL will be a little softer and not as good.
I think so, yeah.
Maybe there's open doors for rugby players.
There you go.
Okay.
The more you can do.
We're coming back.
Crazy thought up here, trust me.
Okay, you guys all right. Don't hear. Always looking for talent. 615-737-1025, our phone text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. We're coming back with the final segment of hour number two, coming up next. Summer of 1985 is when this song came out. They recorded it in 1984, or maybe it was early 1985, but it came out in the summer of 85. And by the fall of 85, everybody didn't want to hear this for a while, but it was a great song. I highly recommend the documentary. So, one thing we need to clean up here and let you know about is the Sounds will be in action. Tonight, the Sounds will take on Iowa, and the first pitch is at 6:35. Pre-game at 6:20 on 94.9 The Fan. Coverage also available on 94.9 The Fan app and 94.9thefan.com. So Sounds Baseball on 94.9 The Fan is presented by Twin Peaks, Family Leisure, Five Points Roofing, Caudill Vet Clinic, and Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning. Jeff Hem will be on the call. Sounds moving forward. The Brewers, their parent club, doing a great job heading towards the All-Star break in first place. They're going to need some reinforcements from the Sounds, I think, before it's all over. The injuries in Major League Baseball, good grief. Nick, My fantasy team is decimated, man. I got like seven guys on the DL.
My team's cruising.
Your team's cruising?
Yeah. We're called cruise control for a reason, okay?
I need some help.
I got
O'Neal. Y'all getting ready for the playoffs, huh?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm in the meat and potatoes of the season, but I got O'Neal Cruz. I got Ellie De La Cruz. That's why I'm called cruise control.
Okay.
I'm on a seven-game win streak.
Those guys are a lot of fun to watch, I have to say. I, on the other hand, am in ninth place or eighth out of nine. Bryce Harper. Bryce Harper just came off the DL, but I got like seven guys on the DL. It's killing me.
You're basically in last place, Willie. Yeah, pretty much.
It's reality setting.
You probably one loss away from being in last place.
Yes. Yes.
The road to the playoffs starts now for you, Willie.
I will say.
You still got a chance, Willie.
You can come back in our league. It's not a points. Like you can. It's averages and stuff in some of the categories. It's a rotisserie, so I feel like a good second half can at least get me back to respectability. Maybe an outside shot to get to like third. I'm the defending champion. But I've been in this league for like 25 years. I've only won it like three times. It's not easy to win.
If I'm you, Willie, go to the waiver wire, pick up guys that will get you RBIs.
I've been trying.
Basically win one every 8 years.
Yeah, pretty much. Okay. Pretty much.
That's not good, Willie.
It's not great.
No, it's not.
It's not
great. How many people are in your league?
It's varied. It's between 9 and 12. On a given year. The last few years, it's been 9 or 10. It's tough, man. We got a couple guys. It's serious. These guys put
so what you saying? You not serious, Willie?
I'm serious. Okay. I feel like I'm serious, and I still can't. I still haven't pulled it off.
Stop picking those Met players, man. You'll be all right.
It is National League only, so I do have to fight my urge to want all the Mets guys. There's some years every now and then where it's good to have Mets guys. A couple years ago, it was pretty good. Yeah. This year, you don't want the Mets guys.
Nah.
Although they've rallied. They're playing better. The Grimace.
What did the score end up being last night?
They did win last night. 7-5 was the final. They got ahead and almost blew it.
Oh, okay.
Is what happened last night.
That must have been the night before they were getting blown out.
They got destroyed. Well,
Monday.
Yes. Well, here's what happened. This is the latest Mets gonna Met kind of moment. They're playing the Pirates. Paul Skeens was pitching. Mm-hmm. And the Pirates hit seven home runs.
Damn.
The Pirates are not a great power-hitting team. O'Neal Cruz, I think, probably had one of them at least. Brian Reynolds had a huge night, former Vanderbilt Commodore, who's going to the All-Star game. It was 4th of July weekend. They ran out of fireworks. They shoot off fireworks when they hit. I mean, there's the 4th of July, but then they shoot off fireworks when they hit a home run. They hit seven home runs. They put up on the Jumbotron, "We've run out of fireworks."
They put the person who hit the home run, put his name right underneath. Home run, Jake Schwinski.
Oh, man. So what you're saying is they did not prepare for the onslaught of home runs to be hit by the opposing team.
They hit so many home runs. No, it was the Pirates were the home team. Yeah, they were telling the home fans, "I'm sorry, but if we hit another home run, you're not going to see fireworks because we ran out. We hit too many home runs."
Runs were the fireworks.
Yeah. That's a good problem to have.
It was good if you're the Pirates, not so good if you're the Met fan watching.
Just look at the spray chart. Everywhere. Yeah.
Well, one of the home runs was hit by Cruz, and he hit it in the water.
Yeah, he did.
This guy is unbelievable. Uh-huh. He's like 6'6". The O'Neal Cruz and Ellie De La Cruz are two of the most intriguing body types in Major League Baseball, which the All-Star games next week, we'll probably talk a little bit more baseball next week, but some of the exciting players are really compelling. Those are two of them. You don't usually see shortstops that are like 6'5", 6'6", but these two guys are just freaks of nature.
They got a cannon. Like, they're throwing the ball 110 miles an hour to first base.
Good Lord.
Yeah. It's different than what you've seen before. Then you got guys like Shohei and stuff. Mm. The only thing that is killing baseball is the injuries. It's just, and I'm not just talking about because of my fantasy team, but across the board, a lot of really good players are hurt. Pitchers still struggle to stay healthy more than ever before. And even the position players. Like Mookie Betts had a freak one, got hit in the hand with a fastball. So he's going to miss the All-Star game. He'll be back eventually. But so some of it's just bad luck. But pulls and arm issues, it's just hard to avoid it.
Well, I think it's pulls. I know from a pitcher standpoint, there's not much you can do if, you know, you have to have Tommy John surgery.
Yeah, if you blow out your elbow.
Yeah, that's something that's just because of the volume of throws. It probably happens more times than not, you would think. But I'm thinking like pulls, like hamstring pulls. Like, why are y'all pulling hamstrings and stuff? I can understand maybe a lower back or something because you're swinging, the torque you're using to hit the ball possibly. But you don't see too many back injuries in baseball. Like, why y'all pulling hamstrings? I understand y'all running from home to second to third and back to home. I get that. But why are y'all pulling hamstrings?
I've always wondered that because it's always been there, even in this day and age, where you got the weight training. Mm-hmm. It was like that before, too. But I guess that you could be standing in the outfield for 4 or 5 minutes, and all of a sudden you're going full speed, or you're standing at first, or you've been in the dugout. Mm-hmm. You haven't gone full tilt, and then that one moment you got to go full tilt.
And you pull something.
And that's when it goes. That's the only thing I can figure. But
you know, I wonder, okay, Willie, and I know it's been some years since you last played, but – how did baseball players take their condition in an off season? Did they, because I understand like football, the generation before mine probably didn't take it as serious. Guys had other jobs because they weren't getting paid as much. Guys were smoking cigarettes at halftime, all this other stuff. So I know that sort of environment was going on, and they probably didn't take their health or their conditioning that series. They probably waited until camp started, then they get conditioned. But how does baseball, do they take their conditioning that serious, considering they don't run a lot?
Yeah, I think now it is 100 times more intricate than it was when I was playing. Mm-hmm. Baseball, I think, was one of the last to get into real weight training. Mm-hmm. When I was playing in the 90s in college, baseball as a whole, even at the very top level of Major League Baseball, and we're running out of time, this is a great question. There were still people, old school managers in the 80s, that would like, they didn't want you to lift weights. They were like, well, it's gonna make you sore, tight. You can't, you know, we have a game every day. You can't lift and then play. You know, just rely on your natural stuff. You're going to get too big, muscular. That was kind of the mindset all the way up until, say, the mid-80s. Uh-huh. Then more and more people are like, no. I can get bigger and stronger here. And then you started to see
bigger
Jose Canseco and Mark McGwire, and all of a sudden, then it got to a whole nother level with the steroid stuff. But it kind of went from one end of the extreme to the other. Mm-hmm. Now it's much more modern of you build your body. You work on that explosiveness. I think the athletes in the game are way better. Like, try to hit a gapper now. It is not easy.
Tough.
You don't have Pete Incaviglia in the outfield, you know, these big stocky guys who can hit, play in the outfield. There's too many balls that get hit there, and you are expected to catch balls that are in the air or certain, because they track how long a fly ball is in the air, how much ground you cover. So I think it's come a long, long way, and it's led to a lot of different layers of the game. But it's a great question on how conditioning has changed. But still, a lot of guys getting hurt. All right, when we come back, we're going to switch gears. We're going to talk about NFL officiating. How do you make it better? The Athletic has a deep article. Dean Blandino is in the middle of it. And question this, and just think about this during the break, and then we'll tell you the answer on the other side. How much do you think the average NFL official makes per year? How much do you think the average NFL official should make per year? We'll tell you on the other side here on 102.5 The Game.